Coming up on KUCB News, the Philippine consulate makes a stop in Alaska. And where do rural Alaska health providers turn when they need blood? Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Theo Greenlee with some local news on Wednesday, July 14th, 2021. LifeMed Alaska is a first responder and emergency transport company that serves communities across the state, from St. Paul Island in the Bering Sea to Wolf Lake in the Mat-Su Valley. The emergency medical technicians respond to all kinds of trauma and illnesses. They help people in generally remote areas get to hospitals when they're hurt or sick, and they often have to do so under inclement Alaska conditions and with limited resources, one of those being blood. The company started carrying its own blood supply at some of its bases over the last few years, but many locations still don't have access. KUCB's Maggie Nelson reports on the challenges of getting a reliable supply of blood to medical providers in Alaska's remote regions.
When someone who's injured or sick needs blood, medical providers can clot the blood or increase blood pressure to buy some time before they can get a patient to the hospital. But LifeMed flight paramedic Angela Nimi says when it comes down to it, no amount of saline solution or clotting medication will save someone who needs a transfusion.
I mean, you'll watch a person just kind of bleed out and die in front of you, and there's nothing you can do.
Nimi has worked as a paramedic for LifeMed for about 8 years, five of which she spent at the Unalaska Dutch Harbor base. She says having access to blood on the island, which is about a three-hour flight from Anchorage, is a huge deal for providers and patients.
Yeah, there's just lots of times when you watch the patient just wish you could give them some blood because you know if that you had blood products, you could, you know, for lack of better words, nurse them through to get them to a doctor, to get them to a surgeon and an OR suite where they can get what they ultimately need. But because you don't have those blood...
LifeMed has been working with the Blood Bank of Alaska to improve access to blood products in remote areas of the state for roughly the last 5 years. But it wasn't until last April that the company was able to get units of blood beyond its headquarters in Anchorage to Unalaska. It was the first of the 7 LifeMed bases outside of Anchorage to carry blood products. Prior to that, the nearest blood was in Dillingham. Now, when patients on the island need blood, Nimi and her crew pull 2 units of Type O out of what she calls an astronomically expensive refrigerator at their home base in the Unalaska Valley. Then they throw it in a black refrigerated carrying case labeled human blood.
It's kind of cool. We're pretty specific about how we pack it. We've just thrown some blood tubing and saline in here because those you need these to administer it. But there it is.
Wow. There it is.
That's it.
Nimi pulls the case out of her car, lays it on the runway, and casually pops it open, revealing the small dark bags. But as LifeMed Clinical Services Director Eric Lewis points out, there's very few people in the state who have access to this precious resource outside of a hospital or blood bank.
We're the only medevac team that stores blood at our remote bases and carries it on each transport.
The Blood Bank of Alaska is the only blood bank in the state. LifeMed is the only first responder flight team that carries blood, and it only has 3 bases where it actually has access to blood products: Anchorage, the Wolf Lake Helicopter Base in the Mat-Su Valley, and Unalaska Dutch Harbor. Lewis says part of the reason that blood is scarce in remote places is that it's really tricky to get access to it. It's even tougher to transport.
So it gets packed in special boxes, checked in and checked out. When it exchanges hands, it's very much like it as a medication that we document, you know, who signed it out to who. We keep track of each blood unit number and how long it was out of the refrigerator and in the cooler, the date and time that it goes into the refrigerator, which also...
Lewis says the units have to be replaced every 3 weeks. If they're not used, they're returned to the Blood Bank of Alaska, assuming all documentation is sound. He says all of that tracking, the special equipment like sensors and cameras on refrigerators, and the frequent transport of the blood products makes it expensive. The company also has to work with several regulatory agencies in order to store and transport blood, which is considered a drug by FDA standards. But what makes this particularly challenging, and what keeps more first responders from getting access to blood, he says, is that Alaska just doesn't have a whole lot of donors.
Another reason why we were slow to open up at other bases is they didn't have a lot of volunteer donors. They didn't have an unlimited supply of blood to give us. Because blood has a fairly limited shelf life, and it wasn't like they had a large backstock, so they were able to...
Lewis says they're working to expand the reach of their miniature blood bank system to other rural areas in Alaska. And those efforts are appreciated by staff at clinics in isolated areas like the Aleutians. Sarah Spelsberg is a physician assistant that often works at Unalaska's Aluluk Family and Health Services Clinic.
So the clinic has never really been in a position where we could manage and monitor something like that. And so to have LifeMed having that resource on island is a pretty incredible gift.
To find out more about the precious resource of blood or to learn about becoming a donor, visit the Blood Bank of Alaska's website. In Unalaska, I'm Maggie Nelson.
Okay. I just want to like poke it.
Just poke it, yeah. Go for it. You can't do anything to it. I shake it sometimes.
Alaskans are set to elect candidates in an all-new way starting in the next state election, and it leaves political parties with less power. On Monday afternoon, Superior Court Judge Gregory Miller heard arguments in a lawsuit aiming to block the new system. Attorney Ken Jacobus is one of the people who filed the legal challenge.
This act would get rid of the party primary system, and political parties would no longer select their candidates to appear on the general election ballot. That's a big problem.
Jacobus is a Republican. The other plaintiffs are Libertarian Scott Kohlhaas and Robert Byrd, chairman of the Alaska Independence Party. Last year, when Alaska voters adopted Ballot Measure 2, most of the attention was on the system of ranked choice voting it creates. But ranked choice is only for the general election. Ballot Measure 2 also changes Alaska's primary to an open election. That means all candidates, regardless of party, appear on the same ballot, and voters select one favorite. The top four candidates will advance to the general. Jacobus says the new system deprives party members of their right to help select the party's nominee. One of Jacobus' objections is that it allows candidates to adopt any party label they want.
If I were a communist running in Alaska, I would say I was a conservative Republican, because that would get me the votes.
Assistant Attorney General Margaret Patton Walsh defended the new voting system. She says the Constitution doesn't require the state to run primaries that help parties select their candidates. She also says Ballot Measure 2 leaves parties free to influence elections in other ways.
Parties can select their own nominees, back their own nominees, endorse candidates, provide campaign support for their own candidates. They are not required to do anything by Ballot Measure 2, and therefore there is no forcing of candidates upon the political parties.
Judge Miller didn't say when he would issue a decision, but he said it would be soon. Several hundred Filipino Alaskans from around Southeast gathered at Centennial Hall in Juneau this week to get much-needed services from the Philippine consulate. After 2 years and a pandemic-related delay, the consulate's mission from San Francisco means Filipinos in Alaska can finally visit their families back home. KTOO's Pablo Peña has more.
A line forms behind a table in the lobby of Centennial Hall where Filipino Alaskans are waiting to get services to renew visas, passports, and apply for dual citizenship. Masked volunteers take the temperature of each person before they enter the main hall. The Philippine Consulate's regional office is based in San Francisco and serves most western states from Colorado to Alaska. Typically, Filipinos who need services have to travel there to get them, but a visit like this saves them a lot of time and money. Nora Carrillo is a volunteer and also applied for her dual citizenship in the Philippines with the consulate.
It is nice for them to come over here and do the dual citizenship instead of us going in San Francisco, because it takes a lot of time, and plus it's expensive. So we are really thankful for them to come up here.
Rebecca Carrillo is the honorary consul to the Philippines in Juneau. She says the consulate's visit had been originally scheduled for last year, but the COVID-19 pandemic halted those plans. As a result, there was a backlog of people in need of consulate services.
For us here in Alaska, many Filipinos, Filipino-Americans, who would otherwise just be able to fly to San Francisco to receive services in person, were unable to do so, thereby increasing the surge in the volume of calls at the Filipino consulate.
She also says that travel restrictions to the Philippines meant that Filipinos in Alaska couldn't visit their families back home.
There was a period when foreigners were not allowed to be issued visas to travel to the Philippines under certain 5 conditions, which include if they are a parent of a Filipino child with disabilities, whether they're serving on a humanitarian mission or their business.
Edric Carrillo is president of the Juneau-based Filipino Community Incorporated. He says several hundred people from around Southeast Alaska were in need of the consulate services. He says the consulate's visit means that the Filipino community in Juneau is recognized alongside bigger communities in the country.
That small community of, 30,000 plus people can, rally together enough to get that level of recognition really, is a testament to the community here and other communities in Alaska.
Consulate General Neil Frank Ferrer led the mission and says he's happy with the turnout.
The consulate, prior to the pandemic, has been making Alaska as a priority for the outreach services. But now that the pandemic is more or less under control, I intend to come to Juneau and to Alaska every year.
The Philippine consulate is in Fairbanks this week and will be in Anchorage on August 26th. In Juneau, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña.
The Mariculture Open House that was postponed yesterday is back on. The event was canceled when the presenter's airplane couldn't land in Dutch Harbor. But they made it in today, and it's happening right now at the Burma Road Chapel. Swampsea, APICTA, and the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation are here with a small team of mariculture experts to share information about the mariculture industry. Unalaskans can come to the Burma Road Chapel at any time today to learn about mariculture, and there will also be presentations held at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and again at 5. For more information, visit our community calendar at kucb.org. The Museum of the Aleutians unveils their newest exhibit on Friday, Noah and the Pribilof Islands, From Fur Coats to Conservation. The exhibit explores the history of the Pribilof Islands, the Northern Fur Seal, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The opening event will be held from 6 to 8 o'clock on Friday evening and is free to the public. Families are also invited to Museum Family Activity Day on Saturday from 1 to 3. And it's that time of year for the annual Ballyhoo Mountain Run. Racers will run up Ballyhoo Mountain and back down again. The race was held virtually last year because of COVID-19 restrictions, but it'll be back in person this weekend. Race check-in is at 5:15. Race starts at 6 o'clock Saturday evening. You can get more information by calling 581-1297. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Theo Greenlee, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.